Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Capital One has a fresh take on banking. Now you can open a new savings account in about 5 minutes and earn five times the national average. Banking with Capital One means five times the savings towards your dream honeymoon, or five times the savings towards your family's ultimate vacation. Even five times the savings towards just feeling good about saving. It's time to make your savings goals come true. This is Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One and a member FDIC.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and in the early hours of Monday, the 4th of November, these are our main stories. The President of Lebanon has appealed for national unity, but large crowds of anti-government protesters have again taken to the streets.
All we have received so far is the government's resignation. We still have a long way to go.
President Trump says the name of the whistleblower who triggered the impeachment inquiry against him should be published. And the Indian capital is engulfed in a choking smog. Residents are told to stay indoors. Also in this podcast, the moment when protesters in Hong Kong restrained a man after a knife attack at a shopping mall, and why street protests in Chile are continuing despite concessions from the country's president. We begin in Lebanon, where on Sunday, tens of thousands of anti-government demonstrators again took to the streets. Protests against perceived corruption and government inefficiency began in October, and although the government has now resigned, the protesters say that's not enough.
All we have received so far is the government's resignation. We still have a long way to go. If the new government that is formed isn't one that the people want, the revolution will return even bigger.
Our Middle East analyst Alan Johnston is following the story.
These demonstrations, now going into their third week, are unprecedented. Lebanon really hasn't seen anything quite like this before. And back on Tuesday, the demonstrators seemed to score a really quite significant victory in their terms. Saad Hariri, the prime minister, resigned. And just for a few days, it was as if Lebanon was returning to something a little more normal. The banks reopened, for example. The military started clearing people off the streets, and what demonstrations there were of a smaller scale. But for the demonstrators, Saad Hariri's disappearance or resignation just wasn't enough. They say the whole political establishment must go, and they are back in really very large numbers in Beirut and other cities as we speak.
Now, earlier, there was a pro-government demonstration, wasn't there? Give us an idea of what sort of numbers we're talking about there.
A counter-demonstration. This was supporters of the country's president, Michel Aoun, who gathered in significant numbers again, waving the Lebanese flag and waving the orange of the party that the president founded. They gathered at the presidential palace to show their support, and those people would say that Michel Aoun, the president, is the right man to deliver the change that so many Lebanese want. They would worry that if you were to sweep the president away, there would only be more chaos, more delay, more economic trouble. They would say that you've got to gather around the president, and he made a speech to that effect, calling on the Lebanese to unite behind a promised programme of reform. But for the people gathered in the squares tonight, promises aren't enough.
That was Alan Johnston. President Trump says the name of the whistleblower whose complaint prompted the ongoing impeachment investigation against him should be published. Mr. Trump has been accused of withholding military aid to Ukraine to press it to launch an investigation into his rival, Joe Biden. He spoke to reporters before boarding a helicopter at the White House.
The whistleblower gave a false report. And because of that false report, people thought bad things were done. The whistleblower should be revealed. because the whistleblower gave false stories. Some people would call it a fraud. I won't go that far, but when I read it closely, I probably would. But the whistleblower should be revealed.
Republican Congress members have complained that the impeachment investigation has been unfair to them and to Mr. Trump, and that restrictions have been placed on the questioning of witnesses. Stay indoors and close your windows. That's the advice being given to residents in the Indian capital, Delhi, which is being choked by toxic smog. Our correspondent, Pratishka Gildial, has been out on the streets of Delhi.
There was virtually no sunlight in Delhi today due to the thick layer of smog that's hanging over the city. Here on the streets, it's particularly difficult to breathe, and I can feel an itch in my throat. It's a huge concern for residents, with studies showing that pollution is causing higher levels of lung cancer and premature deaths.
The levels of air pollution have already been declared a public health emergency, and on Sunday it reached severe plus levels. Visibility was so poor that dozens of flights scheduled to land at Delhi's international airport were forced to divert. Here's our South Asia editor, John McGivering.
The latest public health advice was stark but simple. Cancel outdoor activities and stay inside. As the smog thickened, today's air quality became the worst this year. This is now officially a public health emergency. Delhi's chief minister described the air pollution as unbearable and called on the government to take immediate action. Some young people braved the smog to protest, also demanding a more dynamic government response.
We're concerned about our futures and about our health, but we're also fighting this on behalf of children and the elderly who bear the biggest brunt of the problem here. And so we know that the government of Delhi has taken some measures, but these are not enough. We want longer-term sustainable measures.
The smog is caused by a cluster of factors, including weather patterns, vehicle emissions, and the recent mass release of firecrackers to celebrate Diwali. In recent years, as the smog has clearly worsened, the authorities have introduced a series of measures. Just last year, the Supreme Court banned polluting fireworks and restricted the use of so-called green ones. But critics say the ban wasn't properly implemented. There's debate too about another underlying cause, the practice of farmers in neighbouring states burning stubble. That too has been banned, but some suggest it's cheaper for farmers to carry on and risk being fined than invest in greener methods. Others accuse politicians of focusing on short-term measures each time the smog returns, instead of making more effective long-term change. In the meantime, many in Delhi are struggling to breathe. The government urged those feeling breathless or giddy or with chest pain to see a doctor. This protester said the impact on health is widespread.
Patients are coming with more like lung respiratory diseases, like morely affected with asthma. Now, in this present condition, the pollution is increasing more.
Even the iconic Taj Mahal is suffering. Officials have deployed a giant air purifier at the monument in the hope of protecting the fabric of the building from corrosive toxins.
That was Jill McGivering. Since August last year, more than 2,000 people have died from an outbreak of the Ebola virus in eastern DRC. But international efforts to try to control the spread of the virus have been met with suspicion and in some cases violence. Now a journalist working for a community radio station in Luemba, who was broadcasting on a programme to raise awareness of Ebola, has been shot and killed. Our Africa regional editor Will Ross has been following developments.
We're hearing that a number of gunmen, armed with machetes as well as guns, broke into the home of Papi Mumbere Mahamba, this journalist who was working for the community radio station in Luemba, and they killed him, injured his wife, and then set fire to their home. This happened at night, and of course, we don't know exactly what the motive is, and it's quite difficult to get sort of concrete information from the officials, but there is suspicion that the Mai Mai rebel group was behind this attack, and they have carried out quite a number of attacks in the Ituri region in the past, including attacks on Ebola health centres and on health workers.
A lot of people will be wondering why anyone would attack people who are trying to get the word out about Ebola, who are trying to beat Ebola.
It is a difficult one to understand, to explain. The journalist, we understand, had just before the attack had been on air and had hosted a radio program that was all about raising awareness about Ebola, how to stay safe. And the answer to why these attacks happen, you have to really look at the years of problems that have gone on in that part of Eastern Congo, where there's been conflict continuously for years and years. You've had international peacekeepers on the streets. People haven't been going to school. The healthcare system's in a mess. And then suddenly people come along and say, well, there's this virus that has taken grip. And when somebody dies, you have to tell us. And then people come in and take away the body, and they're not allowed to have a normal kind of burial. And suddenly the suspicions all start sort of spreading like wildfire. What is this virus? Does it really exist? So there are a lot of people, and there's been research on this, a lot of people in the area where Ebola's been killing so many people, they still don't believe that it's a real virus. And they suspect that the whole effort to stamp out Ebola has another motive, and this is part of a plot to kill people in their area.
And just how many people have been affected by Ebola in the region?
So since the outbreak began in August last year, more than 2,150 people have now died. So you'd think that having seen that number of people die from the virus, the message would have got out that this is a real thing. But that it just shows how deep the mistrust is and the suspicion is, especially in the rural areas.
That was Will Ross. Facial recognition technology has the potential to quickly identify suspects in tightly packed crowds. And for the organisers of live music events, the potential security benefits are clear. Many companies are already experimenting with the technology, but following a backlash from musicians and privacy activists, some are now rethinking their plans. This report from Henry Bellow.
For generations now, live music festivals have brought tens of thousands of people together, cramped in tight spaces, reveling in the sounds of their favourite bands. For security teams, the promise of facial recognition technology is clear. The ability to pinpoint anyone in a crowd with a criminal background and perhaps criminal intent. And it's already being used. In California last year, it was used to keep the singer Taylor Swift safe from known stalkers. Police have also used it to make arrests. When Hong Kong pop star Jackie Chung performed before 60,000 people in China last year, police located and detained a man wanted for economic crimes. But it's this type of mass surveillance that's concerned many musicians, who believe their audiences shouldn't be scanned without their consent. Some go even further, arguing the technology is racially biased and an invasion of privacy that must be banned altogether. Rage Against the Machine guitarist Tom Morello is one of the leading critics of the technology, comparing it to an Orwellian dystopia. His activism and sustained pressure from the digital rights group Fight for the Future has been credited for forcing two of the biggest live music companies in the US to back away from the technology. AEG Presents and Live Nation Entertainment had both flirted with the technology, even investing and partnering with some startups. They now insist they have no current plans to use it. But Live Nation Entertainment hasn't ruled out the prospect of using it in an opt-in basis. Artists like Tom Morello say this is a partial victory for civil liberties. But the technology may prove irresistible to festival organisers who value security over privacy.
And that report was by Henry Bellow. Still to come in this podcast.
So this is Molly. We scanned her head 105 different times with 105 different expressions.
The creation of avatars and the roles they could play in the future. Just under a month ago, Chile's government increased subway fares and citizens launched street protests. Over the weekend, an estimated 1 million people joined a peaceful march in the capital, Santiago. Other demonstrations have been violent, with arson, looting, at least 20 deaths and several hundred injured. Although President Sebastián Piñera reversed the fare increase and agreed to replace cabinet members, protesters have stepped up their demands with fresh protests and more violence and demands for the Pinochet-era constitution to be rewritten. From the Chilean capital, Santiago, our South America correspondent, Katie Watson, reports.
Thousands of people have come out onto the streets yet again in Santiago, just like they have over the last 2 weeks. And the trouble has started early. There are dozens of military police on the streets with their armour, and we've seen water cannon and tear gas being thrown to try and disperse the crowds. But people here aren't giving up. You can hear people chanting, saying, we're on the streets, we're asking for dignity. The atmosphere here, though, is tense. Many people are very distrustful of the Chilean broadcasters. They've just pushed us out, a big crowd, saying, you know, go away. So the environment, even for media, can be quite difficult. That said, the vast majority of people here are on the streets protesting peacefully and asking for meaningful change. And I spoke to a few of them.
I want a better Chile, one where there are more benefits, not just for the poor and rich, but for the middle classes too. We need housing, education, health for everyone.
We are fighting for our rights. What we are asking for isn't being addressed. People are tired and we're out on the street because we can't see a solution. The change that Piñera made in the cabinet was a joke. People we wanted to go haven't gone. He's not doing anything, so we're here until our demands are met.
Now, Sebastián Piñera has already made some concessions to wages, to pensions. He's also changed the cabinet. A lot of people were very angry with who was sitting at the top. But those changes have been criticised as cosmetic, and now people are calling for much more meaningful change, a more inclusive society, a change in the constitution, because the constitution was drawn up during the dictatorship, and many people feel that is to blame for the environment, for the economy, and the way politics is taking place here in Chile today.
That was Katie Watson reporting from the Chilean capital, Santiago. The state-owned oil company of Saudi Arabia, Aramco, is the world's most profitable company, worth anything between $1.2 and $1.5 trillion US dollars. That's significantly more than Microsoft or Apple. Regulators have given the go-ahead for part of it to be listed on the Riyadh Stock Exchange in what will be the world's biggest flotation. The listing is part of Saudi Arabia's aim to diversify its economy away from a reliance on oil, and it forms part of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's wider economic vision. Our business reporter Katie Prescott told us more about Aramco and their plans for the flotation.
This is all about the Saudi government, which owns Aramco, owns 100% of Aramco, trying to diversify the economy away from a dependence on oil and gas, which, for want of a better word, fuels it. It's also about opening up the company and, by association, the country onto the global stage. And this has been really noticeable over the past few years in how Aramco's been behaving. This was a company that we really didn't used to know very much about. It was completely shrouded in secrecy. It didn't even publish its financial results. It didn't make them public. And that's really changed in the last year. So, for example, in August, the company held a conference call for analysts so people could ask it questions, which is a real sign of openness. It started publishing its financial results. In the document this morning that came out accompanying the announcement to float, it said that even divorced women in Saudi Arabia will be able to buy shares. And so it's about diversifying the economy, bringing money into the economy in order to develop it in different ways. But I do think it's also about becoming more global.
So do you think this is going to mean a big change in the way that Aramco itself is run?
Definitely. And I think it has to, because at the moment we're seeing these shares being listed in Saudi Arabia. But the grand plan is to also list on a big international stock exchange, London or New York. And with that come certain rules around things like governance. Now, that's a bit difficult when you're a company which is government-owned, state-owned. And so that's why we've started to see this shift in the last year about them being more open about how they're doing, actually talking to people about their plans for the future. The language in this document today, I thought, was really, really interesting. It really spoke to an international community and international concerns. It talked about sustainability, how they were trying to make the company more environmentally friendly. You might say, well, how do you do that if you're a fossil fuel company? But they would say, you know, they're getting their oil out of the ground in a more efficient and greener way. So there's definitely a change in position.
Our business reporter, Katie Prescott. An avatar can be a realistic digital representation of us in video form, taking on many of the roles people perform. That raises the question of who has the right to own and control them. As part of our 100 Women series, Amelia Martin-Hempel has been to Los Angeles, where some of the technology is being built.
So I did a series of facial scans, 3D facial scans.
So this is Molly. We scanned her head 105 different times with 105 different expressions.
Molly is the late wife of avatar developer Alex Henry. While dealing with terminal breast cancer earlier this year, she willingly underwent 3D scanning to create an identical digital twin. With the help of her husband, she hoped her avatar could continue to exist in the virtual world after her death. Alex says the avatar is not a replacement for Molly, and while he'll continue to develop its character to showcase the technology, it won't be available to his clients.
I don't want to control Molly in her afterlife. I just want to do what we started off doing, as much as that feels right.
So what can we do with our avatars, and who has the right to control them? To find out, I have one created of myself.
Basically, all these cameras, they're going to take a picture of you at exactly the same time.
Luke Schurgers is co-founder of DNA Block, an avatar creation startup.
So what actually is an avatar?
I think generally it's something that's like interactive or that's three-dimensional.
So here she comes.
Christine Marzano is Luke's business partner at DNA Block and a former model. Her avatar is now being hired by fashion brands to model clothes digitally.
What else can I do with digital Christine?
You have healthcare, you have chatbots, you have personal companions, personal assistants.
Crystal's so sure avatars will be part of our future lives that even her six-month-old daughter Aurora has undergone a full body scan to create one.
And are you worried that when she grows up, she might not be happy with her image being used in a certain way?
We'll hope that she's happy with that. But it's just like any child actor, you know, but at least this is a likeness rather than her actual self.
Crystal says she has full control over how her baby's avatar is used because she holds the key to its data. But many of the industries that have invested heavily in avatar technology are also known for the commodification of women's bodies. Could turning women into digital objects that can be controlled by anyone make that even worse?
Wow.
So, how's your headset feel?
Yeah, great.
Good. So, I'm going to hand you your handset. What does it say?
Go upstairs and meet Casey by the strip pole. Oh, my gosh.
That's Casey's condo, a game that allows players to interact intimately with the avatars of real-life porn stars, including Casey Calvert. I spoke to her on the phone.
Hi.
Is there anything you wouldn't be happy with your avatar doing?
I wouldn't be happy with my avatar doing things that aren't illegal.
Yeah.
But I also understand that an aspect of pornography is that it's fantasy-based. I have long since given up on being protective over my image.
I'm going back to DNA Block to see what Christine's going to do with the avatar she's created for me.
We think you should own it. And that we are just there to license it out to anybody who wishes to use it or who you approve to use it.
So it seems like my avatar is safe for now, but how the future plays out still rests in human hands.
Amelia Martin-Hempel in Los Angeles. Astronauts on board the International Space Station will soon be able to test their baking skills. On Saturday, a rocket launched from the US state of Virginia, carrying nearly 4 tons of freight, including an oven and baking ingredients to make chocolate chip cookies. The experiment will observe what effect the weightless conditions have on the shape and consistency of the biscuits. Dr. Ken Kremer of the news website Space Up Close told us how the oven would work.
it's something really important for the astronauts. It's basically a cylinder. It's got some heating elements baked, coiled around it. And then they're going to put those cookies inside. It's going to take them an hour to heat up the oven, about a half an hour to bake it, and a half an hour to let it cool. And then they'll take them out. So it's a lot like cooking on the Earth, but it's going to take quite a bit longer. It's an experiment, and it's a good experiment. You know, why we're doing this is because we want to bring the comforts of Earth up to space. They'll be up there, the astronauts, for quite a long time, and they don't want to eat reconstituted food. It's nice to have fresh food. You know, the astronauts are always looking for improvements to the menu. What happened in this case was actually the zero-G kitchen. They suggested it to NASA. NASA gets many experimental proposals, and NASA accepted it, worked with this team, zero-G cookies and nanoracks, who actually built it. So it's really important to have the comforts of home up there in space and eat something that's fresh, instead of just reconstituted, or you add water, or you just heat it. So it's fresh, so it should be really nice. Actually, they are doing an experiment to create artificial meat, and we already have experiments to grow vegetables. The veggie experiment is already up there. So we're growing lettuce, and the astronauts get to taste that, and believe me, they're happy when they get to taste that, something fresh from home. We're already doing other kinds of things, but this is the first cookie in space.
Dr. Ken Kremer on space cookies. This is what science is for. She calls herself the grandmother of performance art, but Marina Abramović has long had a distant relationship with her mother country. She left Serbia in the 1970s and has never staged a major exhibition in her home city. But now Belgrade's Museum of Contemporary Art is hosting a massive career-spanning retrospective called The Cleaner, and that's giving some of Serbia's young artists the chance to learn about the Abramović method as they recreate some of the artists' most famous and infamous performances. Our Balkans correspondent Guy Delorne went to see them in action.
The Cleaner is a total assault on the senses, and it starts even before you enter Belgrade's Museum of Contemporary Art with this particular installation, Sound Corridor, from 1971.
This is a blockbuster show. She's a great diva.
Dejan Sretenović is the curator of The Cleaner in Belgrade.
Marina's thesis was that performance is a living form of art. So she wanted to recreate it and to preserve performance as a living art. So it's always interesting for her to train young people and give them the opportunity to pass through Marina's school of performance.
This performance is called Freeing the Voice, and it more or less does what it says on the packet. The re-performer in this case has been going now for an hour and 10 minutes, and she'll carry on until she has no voice left at all.
My name is Ivana Ranisavljević, and I'm a visual and performance artist from Serbia. We still have underground performance art scene, but then there is a point after a few years doing that, you ask yourself, why am I doing this? There's a few people coming to your performances to see you, and most of them are your colleagues.
So doing this to large numbers of people, that must be a radically...
It's a big deal. Yes, it's a big deal.
It's remarkable that this exhibition is taking place at all. The Museum of Contemporary Art was closed for more than a decade as successive governments failed to see through renovation projects. It finally reopened 2 years ago, followed closely by the National Museum. And the Prime Minister's support for the Abramović exhibition would seem to signal better times for culture in Serbia. But local artists are holding in their enthusiasm until they see what happens after The Cleaner closes in January.
That report was by Guy Delorne. And that's it from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you would like to comment on this edition or the topics covered in it, do please send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Jackie Leonard. Until next time, goodbye.
Brought to you by Capital One.
where you can open a savings account in about 5 minutes and earn 5 times the national average. Just imagine, 5 times more savings toward that overdue home addition. Maybe even an addition on that addition. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, and a member FDIC.